Cue the video.
Waiter, bring me a cold drink. It starts to be hot here.
Ergun Ataman, actually, shout out Basket News social media team, best in the business with these memes after the game. It's start to get hot here. 2-2 in both series of the Greek teams. 2-1 in another one that we're going to have game four today. And Real Madrid just closed off their series. This is the Your Bonus Podcast with your hosts, Augustas Šuliauskas. Gytis Blaževičius and Rytis Vyšniauskas. Today we're here to talk about the two games on Thursday and the one game probably one game on Wednesday. Guys, it is getting hot. You both brought some water, but you didn't bring me any like I asked you, so I guess I have to do it myself. We got some drinks, some cold from the fridge, green cans to clench our thirst. There we go. I was thinking about one Coke as well, you know, because Olympiacos also won. Maybe two Cokes, but then you have to pick and choose, and then you get into this situation where someone's going to be mad.
So. Bro, what is these intros, man?
They're coming from somewhere. I don't know where from. So.
Sprite, man.
Like Sprite?
I think it's about the color.
It is.
How do you feel holding a green drink in your hand?
I feel good, but my rankings go like this. Coke Zero, Fanta Zero, Sprite Zero.
Of course, the green drink is at the bottom.
And this is even zero. So I'm not going to drink it, but I'm going to keep it here because of the color.
Okay. Right. And another thing to celebrate besides having two game fives is we just reached 1,000 BM Plus subscribers on BM Plus, which is a great achievement. Thank you guys for supporting us and letting us really do this, because without you, we wouldn't be able to. So thank you. And let's now get on to the games. We'll start with Maccabi Panathinaikos. I think I said to you and Donatas in the podcast before that I believe that, Fenerbahce and Monaco is the series of the playoffs, but now I'm changing my opinion. The game was great, high scoring start, felt like a game five already. Well, it was a do or die for Panathinaikos, a lot of tension in the air, and we saw Panathinaikos come out with a comeback win, very resilient Panathinaikos fighting like dogs and winning this game. What were your main takeaways of this game?
My main takeaway was that it was like both teams, I don't know, played their best basketball. Both teams fought at a crazy great level. And there was one graphic by the EuroLeague, I think with 4 minutes remaining in the game. The point difference in every minute of the match. And it was like this. Maccabi, Pau. Maccabi, Pau. Maccabi. And then in the end, the run that Pau made in the last 5 minutes decided the game, basically. But it was just amazing to watch because, really, as I said, both teams super high quality. Both teams had great things to offer. For example, Pau were leading going into the fourth quarter. And I was watching the game with my friend, and I'm like, what else can Maccabi offer to this game? Maybe a zone pressure, the full court pressure, and then like going back into some kind of defense. And then they were like starting to do so, completely changed the momentum of the game from down 5 to plus 7, I think. Mm. And I was like, okay, now Panathinaikos have to do something. And then it was time for Kendrick Nunn to absolutely destroy, together with Lazor and Slukas, Maccabi's hopes of, I don't know, maybe even reaching the Final Four. But it was just an amazing game. And before we go into deeper analysis, I just wanted to say that one thing I thought was really important that happened in the first 5 seconds of the match. Pau wins the tip, and Kostas Slukas, after scoring 0 points in game three, gets an easy layup to feel good about himself, mm-hmm. to just see the ball go through the net. And I'm like, this is not great for Maccabi, because for Pau to win, you need Slukas and Kendrick Nunn to play great. And after Slukas, Kendrick Nunn almost really, really quickly scores his own bucket. Slukas then adds another, and I'm like, oof, this is not a great sign, because when players of this level make the first shots, you can expect big nights from then, and it happened. You know, Kendrick Nunn, 27 and 4 assists. Lucas, 26 assists, 8 rebounds on top of that. And Powell win despite shooting only 59 field goals. And Maccabi shot 74. And I remember in game one, I said, Powell have to control rebounds. But they won because of their excellence in one-on-one, in pick and rolls, and by shooting the ball at an insane rate. Like having 15 less shots from the field with similar amount of free throws, and then you win the game. That's to me was the most ridiculous stat, probably.
I think with legendary players like Slukas, you expect them to bounce back after a bad game. Players like Slukas don't have two bad games in a row in playoffs when it matters the most. So I couldn't imagine him having another off night like in game three. So that was more or less expected. But as you said, like, Maccabi somehow they were hanging in there. Somehow with some shots, Tamir Blad, John D,
Nebo with his floaters, Nebo with hitting some floaters, really tough shots,
pick and pop Rivero. I mean, they were somehow hanging in there, and they actually built a lead in the first half.
They came back in that first quarter after eight points from Di Bartolomeo.
So we talked about all other series that saying that like the role players will decide this, and I think the role players mean so much. We talk about Slukas, we talk about Nunn, we talk about their greatness. I think Kendrick Nunn, since the fourth quarter of game three, has been the best player in this league, especially last night in the fourth quarter, hitting all those shots. But let's talk about Giannis Papapetru. He didn't have a good season. Probably he wasn't in the rotation with healthy Juancho Hernan Gomez, just for some sporadic minutes. And all of a sudden, he's becoming one of their most reliable players on the court. So Ataman now decided to start with him because of the Bonzi Collison issue, to have more size. And he's making spot-up shots. I think in this series, he's hitting like 60% of his shots.
Two of three this game.
Two of three.
One of them being in this game, leaning fade to the corner, which was I thought was very important as well.
So do you know how many frees he has made in the regular season? Of course, he was injured.
I would say like six.
Five.
Three. Okay. Three three-pointers in the regular season because he played only in 13 games. So
I think we analyzing this game, we first of all should like get rid of the elephant in the room, speaking about Wade Baldwin and that situation.
All right.
So I don't have any inside information from Maccabi's locker room or from the team or whatsoever. But if it is a hamstring injury, well, history shows that professional athletes need at least 3 or 4 weeks to recover, to heal, and then they can play.
Especially a torn hamstring. So, because you can sprain it, you can tear it.
It wasn't torn.
It was said that it was torn on the... No?
No, but he can't play after 2 weeks, even if he wants to.
Like maybe
to
partially
really.
Then.
Look, but...
It depends. It really depends on the grade of this injury.
Either way, like football players, the hamstring injury is the most common injury in football. It always takes at least 3 or 4 weeks of rest for you to get back. And Maccabi probably took a risk. They decided that their best chance to close the series is this game in Belgrade. So, yeah.
Probably Wade Baldwin also.
Probably Wade Baldwin also wanted to play. And that's the thing with hamstring. You might feel okay. Yeah, you might do some moves, take some shots, do your warm-ups. But when you start playing, when you start changing direction, it lets you know once again that it hurts. So I think it was a mistake to rush his comeback. Maybe if they didn't play him yesterday, they could save some time and he could be ready for game five. Now we know that he's definitely out for game five as well. And also, he didn't look himself on that court, which is normal.
Yeah, because on defense, he wasn't able to keep up, you know, and also even on offense, when he got that wide open dunk, you could see that jumped, but it wasn't the Wade Baldwin that we were used to seeing. The dunk was very, like, you know, just there. And just to clarify, Wade Baldwin did have a MRI, which revealed it was a slight tear in the hamstring. So it wasn't just sprained, it was actually...
But not completely torn.
No, it's not torn, slight, maybe. Yeah, that's the word.
So, but it's just that he wasn't ready, mm-hmm. and it was probably a mistake to start him and to play him. However, the team responded. When he left the court, they just kept going. Lorenzo Brown in this series, he's great. How calm he always is, the way he controls the tempo, the way he reads the game. He's a true leader on the court. But of course, every leader needs help. And I don't think the reason Maccabi lost is offense or missing shots or anything like that. I mean, they were fine offensively. Mm-hmm. Even in the end, they missed some good looks. But they just couldn't string two stops together in the fourth quarter. Except for those 4 minutes when they started. But
yeah.
After that, not even one. Yeah, you're right.
For 5 minutes, the Power scored, I think, on every possession. From the 6 minute mark to 1 minute mark, I think there were not one possession where Maccabi actually where Power did not get a point.
Yeah. So they couldn't get any stops. And well, if on defense you're relying on Kendrick Nunn to finally miss a shot, well, you're in trouble.
When he's in the zone.
Yeah. So this brings me to the idea that I have about this. Of course, it's after the game. It's easy to talk after the game in hindsight. But I was thinking this also watching the game. I couldn't watch it live. I was commentating football, so I knew the score already, and I rewatched everything. And I thought, like, okay, so Maccabi cannot really get any stops, but they have a lead. They are up by 5 or by 3. What would I do in this position? I would take notes from Greg Popovich's book in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Hack a Shaq. That was the strategy to basically kill the rhythm of the game. And to send Shaq to the free throw line. I know Matias Lazor is a better free throw shooter than Shaq, but I would hack him in this situation with 4 or 5 minutes left. I have the lead. I will hack Lazor. Let him score 1 or 2 points per possession.
Yeah.
I can respond offensively. I can hang in there just long enough, at least for a couple of minutes. I'm not saying you do this for 4 or 5 minutes and get 3 or 4 guys fouled out of the game, but just try it, and maybe he misses free throws, which he's
been doing that.
4 out of 11 this game.
So 5 of 9.
Oh, sorry, that was the game before. Yeah.
So he's 66% in the regular season and 49% in this series.
So he's there on the court. He touches the ball in every possession.
You were watching only 3 games.
Yeah, the last 3. Oh, sorry,
there were 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he is there on the court and he touches the ball in probably every possession. Mm-hmm. You can foul him. You have the opportunity to foul him. Send him to the free throw line. If Ataman decides to take him off the court, fine. Even better.
I don't think
he wouldn't
that.
Do that.
Yeah.
So maybe that could have been a solution for Maccabi.
Hey, there's one game remaining.
I don't see them winning in Oak. I'm sorry, man. My prediction was...
I'm saying maybe they will try it in game 5.
To try this, you have to have a lead in the fourth quarter somehow.
Yeah, right.
This is a strategy when you're protecting your lead. If you're chasing, it's probably not going to work.
But I've seen teams actually do it when they're losing the game. Because you are trying to get you're trying to stop the clock, and you're trying to, let's say there is like 7 minutes remaining, you're down 15, or 5 minutes remaining, you're down 15. You take 1 point and you expect to get back 2 or 3.
But also, I think
to cut the lead and then to play normally.
If you remember the game, Maccabi had the momentum in the first half of the fourth quarter, and then there was this. Fourth foul by Lazor, and I think after that, what followed was Slukas hitting some free throws, and then Lazor was sent to the line. And I think he hit both of them at that point.
Yeah, in the end.
Yeah,
in the end, he did.
You know, if you start hacking him, you're not guaranteed. Maybe he's struggling in the first three quarters and a half, but at the last.
Well, at least it's protecting me from a 3-point field goal.
Which Kendrick Nunn.
Kendrick Nunn hit some really, really big shots. So it's just an idea, you know.
Yeah.
It wouldn't necessarily work, but maybe worth a try.
You said you wouldn't blame the offense of Maccabi if you're looking from Maccabi's perspective, but you must say how great of a defense Panathinaikos was playing in the last 4 or 5 minutes, because they. Maccabi couldn't create an open shot. All the shots were difficult, and they were missing them. So
I wouldn't say all of them were difficult. Some were good looks, but it's true that Panathinaikos in the fourth quarter were much better defensively. So Maccabi had to work hard to even get a shot at the rim, and Panathinaikos continued doing their thing on offense, creating. But it's normal. Like, Maccabi now depends so much on Lorenzo Brown. And your secondary ball handler is Tamir Blatt, a nice player, but is it the player you put high hopes on in the fourth quarter of a decisive playoff game? Probably not. And at the same time, he doesn't have that size, so defensively you suffer even more.
That's a problem.
And I think, I went on a rant in the last episode about how Pau didn't change anything except Giannis Papapetrou in the 120 minutes of first three games. I have to say, yesterday I saw one thing and I was like, okay, this is a little adjustment, because I thought that Matias Lazor in pick and roll defense was a little bit lower, not like sending two on the ball. He's trying to be at the level where Josh Nebo is. So you don't allow this short roll pass, 4-on-3 situation and a lob.
Mm-hmm.
And Nebo did not have as much dunks, and the points he scored was offensive rebounds and those floaters, which is a... way tougher shot to make than a dunk.
On defense, you live with him taking those floaters.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I thought it was, I criticized him after the last game, but I have to say this is what I was waiting to see, some just different defense. You know, it was not for the whole game because they tried to mix it up, but just a reaction. You know, because if you make Lorenzo Brown play against the same defense for the whole series, he will figure it out. And this is a little bit different, not only for him, but for Maccabi players. So this was a nice thing. And I thought the game really decided a lot on fouls too. In the second quarter, Panathinaikos were over the foul limit, team foul limit. And they fouled three times. I thought Mitoglou had two crazy fouls, and Ritis even wrote in our chat about that.
One of those was just...
Yeah.
I cannot understand how that happens on this level.
You know, it's just...
Mistakes happen.
It's a matter of the moment, I guess. That the Antetokounmpo's foul... And they got 6 points. Maccabi got 6 points from just cheap fouls. And in the fourth quarter, Maccabi were in a team bonus from like 6 or 7 minutes remaining in the game.
Cleveland had 2 fouls that were so unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like stupid fouls, you could call them.
Yeah.
And that went to, you know, put their foul limit that much higher. And not the foul limit, you know what I mean. And I thought at that moment, you know, these seem like... innocent right now.
Too early.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it came to play at the end of the game. Also, what was interesting, that Maccabi went with Hassel Rivero and Josh Nebo at the same time on the court. Do you think that was just a good, like, short-term change that worked for a little bit? Or could that be like their long-term plan to try to play these two guys at the same time?
I've seen them doing this throughout the season. Yeah.
They like to play with two bigs.
These are two big bodies, and you're facing Matias Lazor, so you have to try something. And it's not like on other occasions they don't have a big body at four. They have Cohen or Sorkin. Maybe not that much muscle power, but they're still big bodies. I mean, in the regular season, they would very often close games with Bonzi Colson as a four, but with Pau, you have those matchups. They have Mitoglou, so... You're looking at what's best for the team, and I think playing Rivero and Nebo together is a good idea for at least 4 or 5 minutes in the game. They can play there. Rivero can stretch the floor a little bit, at least to the free throw line. I mean, he has that mid-range jumper, although it looks strange, but
it's very slow.
He's been hitting some of those shots. So we might see that even more in game five. Who knows? I think they're looking for some answers to Matias Lesor.
Yeah.
In some situations, it kind of seems to me a bit frustrating when I remember one possession where Lesor is posting up Sorkin, and everybody in the world watching knows that Lesor will turn to his right shoulder and get to the rim and get an easy layup. But there is no weak side help prepared for this. So he does the move, and then Sorkin just makes this cheap foul, small contact. It's an end one. And, you know, you have, if you're Maccabi, you have to take some risks, because Maccabi doesn't have post-up threats like Lesor. Their only real post-up threat is Bonzi Colson.
But that's neutralized.
But Panathinaikos is responding to it by putting Papa Petro on him. So Lesor is going to dominate. You have to take some risks. You have to send help, or just send him to the free throw line even more.
Also, one thing that Kostas Luka said in his post-game interview was Kendrick Nunn is the best scorer in the EuroLeague right now, essentially. And I don't know, after this game, it's hard to argue with that, at least in the last stretch, when you see the usual suspects would be maybe Wade Baldwin, Mike James, but both of those guys are, well, Wade's not playing, Mike James is not having his series. So I would agree right now that Kendrick Nunn is definitely the best scorer, but at the same time, it's hard to argue with the fact that Kostas Lucas is a game changer in this series as well. The two games that he was taking the initiative, being aggressive and not just facilitating for others, but actually trying to make those mid-range shots, going to the rim. The two games he did that, the two games they won. And I feel like they'll need that in the game five for sure from Lucas. I know that, you know, other players are also important, but I think Kostas Lucas is sort of like the leader of that team mentally and in the locker room and all those, even in the timeouts you see sometimes he's talking over Ataman because, you know, so the guy just has too much experience.
I mean, he's a champion. He's a winner. We know that. He's been doing this for years with different teams, Olympiakos, Fenerbahce. None right now in these playoffs, he is the best scorer in these playoffs. He has the numbers to show it. Wade is not playing, so we cannot really compare them. And it's a shame, of course. But Kendrick Nunn, like I said, since the fourth quarter of game three, he's been unstoppable and unplayable.
Do you have any more insights on the game, Augustus?
I don't know. I just
or should we talk
say
about game five?
11 turnovers throughout two teams in this game. Just wanted to mention this.
That was a quality basketball
insane
game.
Insane quality in this game. I love the game. I'm enjoying this series.
And I'm happy that...
And finally, Panathinaikos won, so nobody's talking about the refs, so you can actually enjoy what happened on the court.
Exactly.
Thank
what
you,
I was
guys.
Gonna say,
I don't know. From the messages I got, I got the impression that they were still playing 5-8.
I mean, I was actually looking at some of these calls, writing down what I thought was questionable or not, but on both ends there are mistakes, and you can argue as long as you want.
Didn't have a problem with the refereeing. The better team won.
Yeah, right now I think this game was not influenced by the referees, and that's the, like you said, the most the best part about it. We're heading into Oaka game five next week. You guys seem to have quite a clear opinion on that game and its outcome. Ritas, you're pretty confident.
I mean, to me, it feels like the series is over, although there is still a game five to play. And I hope Maccabi will show up. I hope they will find some energy to compete, but I don't see them winning that game. I mean, my prediction was Maccabi in four based on them not playing game five in Oaka, because I said they wouldn't have a chance over there, and based on the fact that Wade Baldwin and Lorenzo Brown can match Kostas Lucas and Kendrick Nunn. So if you tell me before the series Wade Baldwin is not going to play, I'm going to say pow in four or even a sweep. So now in this position, game five, I think Power will crush them.
Mm.
They should. I cannot expect anything else to happen. Although as a basketball fan, I want to see drama and I want to see a close game. And I hope Maccabi will somehow manage to hang in there until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but we must admit that the three, four games Maccabi played, well, maybe three games Maccabi played, not game two, they were playing above expectations, I think.
I think yesterday was their best chance to close the series. Up seven in the fourth quarter. That was it. That was your chance.
What do you think, Augustus?
I think there are areas where Maccabi can excel. Let's say they know how to play against this Panathinaikos team offensively, you know, because as I mentioned in the first half, for example, they attacked Lucas, they attacked Nun. Their perimeter defense wasn't as great, so they were finding ways to score. But at the same time, you know, history tells us that nobody has won a game five away in modern EuroLeague history. And also Panathinaikos can make less shots percentage-wise, you know, because they were amazingly shooting the ball yesterday. But I don't know. I think that Oaka is going to be just on an insane crowd.
I think it's going to be the game of the season.
Without Wade Baldwin... You think it's going to be
in terms of fans?
So basically, if you're Maccabi, you're placing your hopes on Panathinaikos players having a bad night.
You know, you're doing your job.
You're doing your job, yeah. But more or less, yeah. You need luck.
You need Bao to miss shots, but that's basketball, you know?
I know it's basketball, but you kind of don't really control that.
No, I mean, you can force them to miss shots. You can do a better job defensively than you did yesterday.
But Maccabi is one of the worst defensive ratings throughout the whole season.
Yeah. I feel like they're
all
lacking.
Of a sudden, I don't have expectations for them to become a defensive juggernaut. I think they need luck, just plain and simple.
They need a perfect game.
Mm. And they already have three game. Of those, so I'm sticking also with my prediction before the series 3-2. But Nikos, very nice that I'm gonna be good on that thing we did some bets on in our company. So I like that it's 3-2.
I also said Pau in five. So
yeah,
I'm just glad
Donatas also said it.
Donatas also said Pau in five. I mean, nobody really expected an easy series here, except 200 people that wrote in the comments that we don't understand basketball. This is going to be 14-0 for Panathinaikos.
Now, talking about not understanding basketball, I learned that boiling a basketball doesn't help.
I saw a picture.
I'm going to deep fry it.
Hey, I saw a picture. Somebody photoshopped it. They made you doing that, actually.
Boiling a basketball.
Yeah, wait a second.
Nice.
Just talk about something.
No, but I
put it on the screen.
I'm telling you, it doesn't do the trick. I think I have to deep fry it or cook it in the oven. Boiling doesn't work. Didn't get any extra knowledge. Didn't become better at basketball at
How
all
do I save
after
it?
Boiling it.
It's all right. We'll show it you can send it
later. And it's a great thing that you mentioned that no team in the history of EuroLeague has won a game five away from home, which could be a smooth transition to the next series we're covering.
To something we might see happening.
Or Mantas finally, I think, has it, or maybe not yet, but it would be great if we can see it now and then go to the next. How about this? Instead of you holding a 1-3 Maccabi...
I love that. Man. I love that.
That's good.
That's quality meme.
That is a good meme.
Don't have to be rich to have a website.
You don't, actually. In the 90s, you would have to be.
That's what Augustus wealthy. Came back from the toilet with, a song that you don't have to be rich.
You don't have to be rich to have a website.
You don't have to be rich anymore. With Hostinger?
.com. Pretty simple these days in 2024.
You also don't have to be very smart anymore. You don't have to go through coding lessons and courses. You don't have to learn design as much. Maybe you do, actually. If you want a nice website, you still need to have an eye for it. But it's so much simpler with templates provided by Hostinger. And besides the templates, if you want to be unique and you want to save even more time, you can use their Hostinger AI Builder, which is, I heard, simpler than using WordPress, which is another website builder. This one apparently is simpler to use. And with the AI functions, you just type in, okay, I want this to be there. I want a window to be there. I want my products to be listed below. All that pops up, and then you just customize. Spend an extra, you know, if you spend an extra hour or two, you get a professional website yourself.
Right. Nice. Yeah. Gitus, do you know what I hate in life?
No. Well, I do, but no, I'm not going to say.
Putting a lot of effort. So if Hostinger can offer me creating a website with as little effort for me as possible, that is a great service.
And plus, that effort is even less when you don't have to look for external services to host the website. Because when you create a website, I'll explain the old man how it works.
Explain it like he's 5 years old.
I'll explain it like he's 45 years old.
Okay, man.
So you have a website that you designed, you created, you didn't have to code anything, but you have the website right now. But that website needs to go somewhere to be stored, like you would draw a painting, you need to put it in a frame and hang it on a wall.
I'm still feeling like you're talking to a toddler. Carry
maybe
on.
Maybe 75.
Okay, carry on.
So you need to host your website somewhere on a server.
Yeah.
And the Hostinger, it's in the name. They provide those services as well. And with them, it's really affordable, I would say, compared to other competitors. And we also have a special code, BNews10, which you can use for all hosting plans to be 10% off, which is a bargain.
You have to cope it now. And on top, Riti said, least effort possible. You can do it on your phone as well. They have a mobile website builder.
Jeez.
What are you waiting for,
Riti? Is there a reason for you not to create a website?
On Hostinger?
We don't have any. And now let's move on to another game four that got us the game five, but the actual game itself was very, very different. We saw probably the first time when the playoff game, except for one series that we're not talking about until Final Four, we saw a boring second half where actually nothing really was in question anymore. Maybe third
nothing
quarter.
Nothing really mattered.
Maybe in the third quarter there was still some hope, but nope. Olympiacos closed that game quite early. By Rita standards, they closed the game against Barcelona in the second quarter. The score was, if I'm not mistaken, 36-23, 13-point lead. And Rita goes on our WhatsApp chat and says, okay, this game is over. I'm going, what do you mean? It's five-possession game, you know, whatever. This game is definitely, why you are writing off Barcelona right away? But
Rita, no, I just saw one team that is happy with themselves getting that one win in Greece that they needed. And I saw another team that was fighting for their lives. So when that run happened, I realized that there is no chance for Barcelona to come back. Maybe the score is not that big, but I couldn't see Barcelona coming back. They were lacking energy. They were complacent. I mean, it looked like they felt like they did their job by winning game three.
They gave up.
And now they're just happy with the split. And Olympiacos, they needed to win. This was a do or die game. This was the most important game for their season. You could feel that from the way Shaq McKissick was playing and the rest of the group. So to me, the game was done after that run in the second quarter, as silly as it sounds. But that's the moment when I realized Olympiacos will definitely win it. And we will have a game five in Barcelona.
Barcelona really gave up, to be honest, in the second quarter. And you said it correctly. They were happy going into game five at Barcelona. But I just thought, I'm going to say this first when talking about this game. 19 points Barcelona scored in 5 minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. And they were leading by 7. And after a couple of minutes, Shaq McKissick and Nigel Williams-Goss stepped on the court. And I thought those two guys changed the game. I mean, I don't know if you remember this moment, but the first possession, Shaq McKissick, he switches on to Satoransky. And he's like, Satoransky, one of the best ball handlers in Europe, he's backing down with the dribble because Shaq McKissick is trying to jump on him, man.
Bite his throat.
I don't know, like, so aggressive. And then he gets a deflection. Hmm. He doesn't get a steal, he gets a deflection. Next possession, he gets a steal. Then Nigel Williams-Goss, I think, draws an offensive foul and then gets two deflections in a row in those possessions. And I'm like, this is game-changing. Like, their energy was over the roof, and they just, I don't know, they completely changed the game. Because in the first 5 minutes, Barca scored 19 points. Some defensive mistakes from Olympiacos. Some
missed shots.
Some missed shots, but some great moments from Barca in transition. And just, you know, the starters of Olympiacos, I thought, were not as aggressive as those two guys and other guys that came from the bench. But those, the Williams-Goss and McKissick, their energy, they had like six deflections in 3 minutes, in straight possessions, basically. It changed the game. It started this insane run that they had.
22-4, I think, at some point, since first 5 minutes. So when, it went even further.
When did the run really finish? Because you could actually say this was until the game, you know?
Yeah.
And Barca scored 19 points in the first 5 minutes, and then they scored 14, 10, and 11 in the next three quarters. That's 35 points in 30 minutes. That's just crazy. And really, Olympiacos defense won them this game. Shaq McKissick was amazing. And Shaq McKissick, according to Beebolytics, was plus 36 in this game in 27 minutes.
I said before the series, he's the player to watch in this series. And I said he will definitely have this one game where he will just explode. And that was probably the game. The good thing for Barcelona is that in the playoffs, it doesn't matter if you lost by 40 or you lost by one. You just lost the game. The series is tied. You're going to Palau. We're not expecting a blowout in game five to Barca or to Olympiacos. It should be a really close game, in my opinion. But in this case, so Barca won game three majorly because of their three-point shooting. This game, there were 5 out of 22. Mm. A miserable performance.
22.7%.
Shooting from downtown. So
Not necessarily just from downtown, but I mean, if we're talking about
general.
Third, fourth quarters, at some point the percentages were below 35 from field goal in general. So
Only 23 made field goals.
And then Naji maybe with this couple of dunks increased that percentage. I had this line written down. Barcelona has provided all the bricks necessary to finish building Sagrada Familia earlier than 2025. Because, man, it's not just missed shots. It's shots hitting the backboard.
There were air balls as well.
Air balls. It's crazy. Like, the confidence was below the ground.
And none of the role players stepped up. I mean, it's normal that sometimes some players might struggle, but nobody actually stepped up. Because Barca has a pretty deep roster, I would say. They have two good lineups. At least two good solid options for each position. In this game, nobody stepped up, whether it's Ricky Rubio, whether it's Rokas Jokubaitis, Nicola Provitola, nobody, absolutely nobody stepped up. Only Jabari Parker maybe hit some shots in transition, but
and
he also finished below his standards.
And we must say that they had the chance to come back into this game because they were getting stops. I mean, Olympiacos, until, you know, the second half of the third quarter, they were still missing some shots, some open shots, some turnovers, all that contributed to the chance to get back in that game. But Barcelona just couldn't convert on the other end at all. So that distance was, you know, only growing, not getting smaller.
How do you feel about Moses Wright playing 0 minutes?
I wanted to say
it's strange, right?
It's strange, but at the same time, I have an idea, a theory of why Bartsakis did it. And I wanted to say now, I think you could see from the beginning that they were feeding Mustafa Fall really down low.
Yeah.
This is kind of, I think, a way to solve the problem because your guards are not producing at the level you kind of wanted them to produce in the first three games. And Fall was just destroying Jan Vesely or whatever, anybody who was there. So because they play this high hedge step out defense almost near the half court, and Fall can just run in, take his position near the basket. Vesely comes back, he gets the ball 1 meter from the rim, and then it's like it's either a foul or a dunk.
And my question is, why would they hedge like Satoransky or Thomas? Why would they hedge Thomas Walkup? Like,
but they were going under with him. They were hedging Kanan and other guys.
Okay.
In the first couple of games they did that with Walkup. Now they're trying to fix it, not fix it, but change it. But it's Olympiacos are playing almost pick and rolls at half court, and then it's like for Jan Vesely, you have to run 14 meters to get back. That stuff, and I think that's why maybe they played Milutinov. I don't know, because Wright had a great game, but if you try to punish from inside, you have Milutinov there. You know, he's better to do that post up, to be a better post up.
And you
up
grabbed
threat.
11 rebounds.
Oh yeah, that was offensive rebounds were huge. And so I thought maybe this is why Milutinov played. He was plus 31. And it's just crazy to me. Like, I read that Olympiacos fans or whatever, not maybe fans, but just people were saying, oh, Milutinov is not playing great. He's not a great addition. He's an injury prone. I mean, this guy was destroying for Serbia last year in the World Cup, in the friendlies. He's a amazing player, and to have him as the second or third option is a luxury. Like, only Real Madrid, I think, has this luxury of having Vincent Poirier.
I don't think they even have three centers of this caliber. Like, they have two, but we're talking about either Moses Wright or Nikola Milutinov not playing.
It's crazy. And to have him, I mean, okay, it's hard to play consistently good when you're playing inconsistent minutes, but just you can't expect this game from him anytime. And of course, I wanted to mention Milutinov, and I wanted to mention Kostas Papanikolaou.
There we go.
With him, everything changes, man. The spacing, he missed a couple of three shots.
Four shots, maybe.
But we said it after the game three loss. Like, you start to realize how important Papanikolaou is when he is not playing.
Yeah, I mean, great cutter, great, not a great shooter, but he can knock down those shots.
I mean, he hit those three in the third quarter that literally closed the game. If there was a door, there was a slit open, he just punched the door, and the door was shut forever for Barcelona. Yeah, that was a crucial run from him, three in a row, actually.
And it's just different with him. You know, before you had Peters or Sigma playing the free position, and Kostas is perfect against closeout defense. And with Barca playing this hedge, you will have a lot of closeouts. So he's a game changer. And who do you have for game five?
What else you want to mention? Dylan Brooks was in attendance. Did you see that video where he was trying the rims? But someone said in the comments he's trying the air, because he literally airballed, I think, all three shots or two shots.
I mean, who cares? He's after season with the street clothes on. Who cares if he airballs
the
shots?
He's looking for his options already in Europe?
Dylan Brooks?
Nah.
I think he's an established NBA player, despite the fact what happened with Memphis and his fans, rivalry with LeBron.
Fans were sending him to China for a while now, so that's why. Yeah, like, new haircut.
He's having fun, man.
Yeah.
I fell in love with Dylan Brooks after the World Cup, and he is a character, so I'm not surprised that he decided to visit
a Euroleague game in Greece. At least we got Dylan Brooks. Now we're going to head to Barcelona for Game 5. And I think, Ritas, you said before the podcast, you see this as an easy win for Olympiacos.
I didn't say easy win. I didn't say easy win. I said it was easy for me to decide.
Mm-hmm.
All in four. But now we're talking about game five. Actually, I think Tyrese Rice on Twitter asked the question, who y'all got for game five? I just wrote Ollie and got like a crazy number of retweets, replies, and all that.
You're one of them, bro.
Sorry, I'll take this.
I don't know the word in Greece.
They think I am for some reason.
I can't say it. Gavrasol? What does that mean? I don't know, man. Probably I said a bad word.
I don't know what you're talking about, but...
No, because I see a lot of them typing this under your posts. I'm
Someone
not sure.
Explain in the comments
what
that
means. I'm not
means.
Sure whether I said the right
Probably
word.
Probably it's not nice. I would expect.
I don't get too many nice ones, but...
But you get a lot of red and white emojis, though.
I do get that. I don't know why they think I'm a fan of Olympiakos or something, but I do believe that for the first time in EuroLeague history, we will have an away team winning game five.
That's a bold statement.
Well, we had this Q&A episode, and I predicted the future saying that we will witness Nigel Williams-Goss game winner in Palau.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sticking with it. I think it's going to be a really, really tight game, a really close game. I do believe that Olympiakos is a slightly better team than Barcelona.
I think now with Papanikolaou as well, it is a game changer. And with having tried not playing right and seeing that was successful, of course, this Barcelona is not going to be as bad as they were in game four. And I'm also anticipating a close game. I would say, you know, Olympiakos, if you listen to that Shaq McKissick interview after two quarters, he said, we know what was taken from us. We're here to basically win this game and go to Barcelona. This was the mentality for game four. I think now the referees are in the background again, finally, you know, because this should be not the focus of this series, I feel like. And now
it shouldn't be the focus of any series.
Well, unfortunately, it is, and we're getting the heat for protecting the EuroLeague referees because we're employed by the EuroLeague, which is the most ridiculous statement. But whatever. What I was trying to say, I feel like they need to reset for Game Five because Barcelona is gonna come out with their home crowd in a very different way, I believe, and I don't expect them missing every single shot. And I still think Olympiakos, even though they shot 12 from 24 this game, I feel like. In the first half, when it wasn't still clear who's going to win, or the first quarter and a half, Olympiakos was missing some shots again. And I feel like they have to be making shots in game five in order to win that game. Because if they come out like they did in the first two games against Barcelona there in Palau Blaugrana, I think it'll be some trouble for Olympiakos. But my pick would still be 3-2 Olympiakos like I did predict before the series. What about you, August?
I think it's really going to be decided by details in the end. One thing I didn't understand from Barca is just, I mean, Ricky Rubio in the starting lineup is okay, but then when you have Sato and Rocas, that was when the run was made. They basically couldn't create anything. Dario Brizuela, with each passing game in the series, has a bigger role because I think he's the best guy from the bench to actually create something in the chaos, because Sato and Rocas are you know different type of players. I think different opponents would suit him better. And Brizuela, one of 10 yesterday, but his minutes are increasing. Maybe he can play a bigger role and get something going from Barcelona perimeter. I don't know. I think Olympiakos wins a close game. I don't really know. You know, I think it's going to be a slight difference in points. And I also think, I don't know, losing by 40, 30 points this game, I don't know how that affects, how will that affect Barcelona?
I think it shouldn't. I think these
you
players...
You think they just gave up? And
I think most of these players been through playoff series, some of them even in the NBA, I believe. They know that it's normal. They know that it can happen. You don't overreact when you beat someone by 30.
For sure.
You don't overreact when you lose by 30. You just look at the score and you see 2-2. That's it. It's a new day, a new game. I don't think it will impact the game.
In theory.
I don't think that's my person. But you know how many times I've been wrong with my opinions and takes and predictions. So
everyone of us.
Probably me saying All in Five should get the Olympiacos fans nervous. And well, you, but you also, both of you are predicting Olympiacos to prevail. So we'll see. But yeah, it's a good series. Really, it's a good fought series. Every game is kind of a different. In every game, you learn something new. There's one night where Moses Wright dominates, then he's on the bench. Now Milutinov is playing, and Barcelona have a good shooting night. Vesely pick and pop mid-range. Then the next game is something else, and it's very hard to predict, honestly. It's it's really a 50-50 situation.
Augustus, I see you're rocking the latest Basket News merch.
Yeah, we have a 50-point game. Do you like it, guys? Because I think it's awesome.
I think it's our best design so far. I really like the illustration style and everything. How it, I don't know. It's a nice design. I'll keep it at that.
And will it be more of this coming soon?
It is a limited edition right now on basketnews.com or shop.basketnews.com. We have it there for $25.95 right now. Shipping Europe everywhere.
There will be more stuff, I think.
We're coming up with some new merch as well. We're gonna add to the collection, especially for Final Four. You'll be able to meet us in Berlin as well, where we'll be selling all the merch in person as well as online. So some great things coming from Basket News. One of them being Nigel Hayes-Davis shirt.
I love that you have Nigel Hayes-Davis hoodie as well.
Yeah.
That's even
that,
better,
that's
better
what
for
caught
me.
Your eye more.
Yeah, I would like to have that one.
Right, so guys, make sure to check out shop.basketnews.com. Check out all the merch we have. More is coming, and I hope we'll see more guys with that shirt in Berlin.
Or girls.
And now the playoffs have arrived to Istanbul. We'll have game four today. Maybe by the time you're watching this, that game is already over or it's going on. But I like I said, the series became much more interesting to watch in terms of emotionally, I would say, when we have these very passionate Turkish crowd. They had a nice pregame show, which was actually quite a viral hit on social media, apparently.
Right.
Second highest engagement in EuroLeague's Twitter posts. Somehow
this season
this season. So yeah, but besides that, I think that crowd gave a lot of energy to Fenerbahce. They were controlling the game, I believe, the whole game. They had one run that really got them a lead, which they just kept the whole third and fourth quarters. Another great performance from Nick Kalatis, facilitating for others, scoring, making the shots he needed to make, open shots. On the other end, we again saw Monaco's guards missing shots, some due to defense, some were open shots, but we got to talk about Mike James so far. I feel like 7 points less and shooting percentage, 7 points less than in regular season he's scoring, and his shooting percentage is 28.6. So I feel like this is one of the topics we'll have to touch on. But first, guys, your first impressions about that game. August, maybe you want to start.
You mentioned, I wanted to say another thing about small ball, but you mentioned Nick Kalatis, and I don't really understand the way Monaco is guarding him. I really don't. He has shot 6 3-pointers in this series and made 4 of them, and all of them were like spot-up shots. You know, not after dribble when the team is going under on his pick and rolls. They have been inviting him to drive, pressuring him, and I don't really understand. Like, there was one moment, I think, in the first quarter when they were playing, I think, Mote Yunus in his normal defense, you know, at the level of the screen, so pretty high up. So instead of going under and forcing Nick to shoot a 3-pointer, which I think everybody would be okay with, the help has to come from the weak side. And you have, instead of Nick, Tyler Dorsey gets a skip pass and he's shooting wide open 3-pointer. And I'm like, Why would you want to see that? Mm. Like, really, I did not understand that. And another thing, Charas is has found a thing that Monaco does not have an answer, and that's small ball. I counted the lineups that were small for Fenner with Hayes at the center, and they were plus 7 in this game. They won the game by 9 or 11 points, I think. And that was the, I think, the key difference.
11.
So the small ball was plus 7. So he's just too big of a weapon. Sasha Obradovic, like I mentioned in the playoff preview, playoffs, maybe not maybe it's not always about who is the better team, but if you can solve this particular problem. And Charas has been going to small ball since game one. He won the game one with it. He won this game three with it. And really, Monaco tried playing with the centers this time. It did not really work that well as they have expected. And I think really, you know, Charas is outplaying Obradovic in this department. And I don't know if they have the... I don't know if Monaco has in them to extend the series today.
I watched that game again, watched the replay of that game. The whole game was close, actually. The four quarters, only the second quarter was the one that had a big difference, 11 points by Fenerbahce.
Monaco fought.
Yeah, and that quarter, the biggest issue for Monaco was hitting shots, and a lot of them were open shots. Of course, the focus is on Mike James, so he's not getting off any good looks, but other players also missed the shots. But Fenerbahce went on a run, built a 7-point lead, and then general stats, hitting threes at 19% this game, Monaco.
Yeah.
And then overall, if you look at the field goals, I think also something at like 40s, 30s. So, but that's a lot of it is because of not making the shots. And if you're not making shots, I feel like it's difficult to expect to win this game.
Yeah, usually to win a basketball game, you need to make shots.
Yeah, and this was the crucial part. I just thought, you know, but like we knew they were playing a good game.
We knew before the series that Monaco is not a reliable three-point shooting team. And it's been their problem even last year when they made it to the Final Four. So it doesn't really surprise me that they have these struggles. Regarding Mike James, I'm not sure if he's hurt or something, or is it just the physicality and the amazing defensive effort from Nick?
But not only from him, I think they have a great plan.
Dorsey's playing, defending him as well.
Well, they're making life hard for him. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's also playing hurt. I don't know that. I mean, his numbers dropped. He still has the impact on the court. He's still a very important player, but I feel like for Monaco to win and to bring the series back home, they need something spectacular from him. They need some
absolutely
ridiculous fourth quarter performers or something like that. I don't see any other way.
I would guess that if you play two games where there's no space for you to create, and you're getting contained so well by Fenerbahce's defense, maybe you just start losing your confidence in the shot, and the defense continues into game four, and we probably will see it today as well.
Mike doesn't seem like the guy who has confidence issues.
No,
honestly.
I know, but if you're not able to get off your shots,
it's just the way they defend him. Like Nick Kalatis is so close to him, and then you have. So he can't really shoot a normal three-pointer. But when he drives in, you always see two people from the sides, you know, and he tries these super difficult shots that is so hard to make, like off one leg falling back over the defender with Kalatis here or Dorsey here. That's super tough, and he's that's not true. Finding, like, open waists, open shots. I don't know, maybe try and go early in transition, maybe more one-on-one instead of the pick and rolls. I really don't know, but others have to make shots as well to open the court for him.
Yeah.
It feels like he has to hit some of those tough shots for them to win.
Yeah. Mm. Like he did in game five against Maccabi last year.
Mm.
But at the same time, I think Eli Okobo and Mike have to do a much better job on perimeter defense. Like they are giving up too many easy drives to the rim. Like in the pick and roll, they get beat to let's say too easily, or in ISO, just they get Fenerbahce create advantage against them too easily. Like, and without John Brown there as well, that hurts you. So
is he gonna play?
I don't know. I haven't talked to Donatas about this.
Mm.
But so what were your predictions then for today? For tonight?
My prediction for the series was Monaco in five. I cannot like switch now and say that, oh, after three games I made up my mind and I think the Fenerbahce will win. Now, by saying this, by sticking to my prediction, I must admit that now I'm predicting just because I wish Monaco to win.
Mm.
Not that I really believe in it. Not that it seems... not that it likely. Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that it seems likely. It's much more likely that Fenerbahce will close the series tonight. But, you know, in sports, especially in predicting sports, the outcomes, you don't always have to be rational. You just have to go with it. And I still say Monaco in five. I don't have much confidence in saying that, though.
Yeah. What about you, August?
I think Fener closes series today.
Tonight, yeah. I agree with you.
But, you know, at the same time, Mike has had three subpar games. I wouldn't be surprised for him to
I think that's what you guys said. That needs to happen if we want to see game five. It needs to be a 20-plus point game with, you know, good shooting for Monaco and teammates also hitting their shots.
I still think it's the bird. I still think it's the bird that leads.
Oh, Fenerbahce team. Fenerbahce's bird.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yellow.
Yeah, yeah, the yellow. All right, guys, just to finish up, let's look at some social media posts that we had this last few days and see what we can react to.
Ooh, okay, oh,
this was a very spicy statement by Pini Gershon.
Chili emojis?
Two coaches who are actually being compared a lot with their style of, you know, being very free with coaching.
Can you go back?
Can you go back for a second?
But isn't this like what you said last week on our Q&A podcast?
Yeah.
It's just that it comes from Pini Gershon.
Exactly. But, well, I mean... not just us. Everybody has said this, probably.
Mm.
Okay, except coaches. But everybody that's on podcasts or, I don't know, even players have said this. So I think it's true. We all know what his strengths are. And it's I read this thing. There is no one way of winning in life.
Exactly.
And his way is just different. Some people don't like it, and I think it's normal.
I feel like for basketball purists like you guys, it is less attractive than someone with a very clear system and tactical adjustments and all that.
Yeah.
With Ataman, it's more simple, but, you know.
You know what I would want to see next? Ataman in a press conference, let's say pre-game before game five, saying, people were speculating, would I really leave but it's like us if we lose the series. I guess we'll never know.
That's a good one. What else do we have?
If he says this after a win in game five,
let's see what else we have.
That would be legendary.
Okay, so Ettore, we forgot about Ettore for a while. Mr. Excuses is one of the comments.
I see. Well, no disrespect to Ettore Messina, but it seems like it's really hard for him integrating players in general for the last few years. It's not only Mirotic.
All right, next up. That's it.
You're, okay. You're a legend,
Ritus. That's all.
I'm sorry,
you're
man.
The legend, man.
I had to say.
Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to our channel. Check out BM Plus, and we'll see you in the next one.